From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 24th day of June 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. He and Todd Hubbs have penned a couple of articles for the Farm Doc Daily website, looking forward into the fall and projecting harvest prices based on yield. You'll want to stick around for that. Jackie Vakes is out of the office today. She's with Total Farm Marketing and is our normal analyst on a Wednesday afternoon. We'll also talk about the weather forecast today with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Oh, and along the way, we'll stick around with Gary for just a bit this afternoon to take up a topic that you can hear a whole lot more about tomorrow on a webinar sponsored by the Illinois Sustainable Agriculture Partnership. You can register for it right now if you'd like at ilsustainableag.org. Gary's going to discuss how to capitalize or potentially to capitalize production practices into the value of farmland. So you'll want to stay with us for this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn today, 0.75 cents lower, settled at $3.24 1/4. December, $3.33 3/4, down 3. And March contract down 4 cents at $3.44 3/4. May corn, $3.51 1/2 for next year. 4.5 lower July, down 4.5 in 2021 at $3.57. July soybeans at $8.70 3/4, down 4 1/4. The August 4.5 lower at $8.67 1/2 on the settlement price. And November futures at $8.70, down 4 cents. January soybeans down 4 1/4. That for 2021. Bean oil futures down 52 cents at $27.65. The bean meal up 40 cents on the day, settled at $2.86.70. July soft red winter wheat at $4.81 1/4, down 4 3/4 for the afternoon. And the hard red July at $4.31 1/4, down 3 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago, June contract 22.5 lower at $93.30. The August at $96.35, down 85. And feeder cattle 32.5 lower at $132.87 1/2. Lean hogs down 97.5 cents at $45.92 1/2 for the day. Crude oil, or rather crude, 251 lower at $37.84. Ethanol futures up 3 8/10 at $1.27 8/10. And gasoline at $1.19. That's down 1.9 cents. Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist from the U of I, now joins us to discuss an article, a couple of articles that he and Todd Hubbs have penned for the Farm Doc Daily website, looking forward into the fall of this year and projecting some harvest prices as they're related to yield of corn and soybeans. Gary, thank you so much for being with us. Why is it that you wrote this article? We'll start with soybeans.
So what we did was, we're obviously coming up on the summer, July and August weather, which is very critical in determining yields. We took a look at different yields at this point of the year and what that would mean to expected harvest prices, using history as a guide, so that as we get into July and August, we can say more and more about what those expected harvest prices will look like.
How is it that you use history as a guide?
Yeah, what we did was we developed a little statistical model that looked at the futures price as of end of May. And also then what happened to national yield. And you can, between those two, futures prices at the end of May and national yield, you can come in within pretty close to what the ending harvest price will be. Just to give you an example, using the history as a guide, if we have a 49.8 bushel soybean yield, U.S. national soybean yield, as WASD is predicting, our estimate of a harvest price would be $8.36. And based on history, we would say that 90% of the time, the 2020 harvest price will be between $8.15 and $8.55.
To clarify, this is the futures price, the November soybean contract?
Yeah, the futures harvest price is a futures price, November contract average during the month of October. So that's what you use to set all your crop insurance products and revenue guarantees.
And now step me through higher and lower yields and what those mean.
So USDA is predicting a 49.8 bushel yield. Let's say it goes up to 51 bushel, two bushel higher, which would be a bumper year. Expected harvest price in that case would be $7.94. Our estimate of it would be $7.94 with a range of $7.55 to $8.13. So if we have bumper year yields here, we would likely see harvest prices below $8, which would also mean that cash prices would be below $8 because we're usually below that. So that wouldn't be a fun scenario. Let's go the opposite direction. Let's say it's 47.8 bushels. We would come up with a price estimate of $8.79. So still not a great price, but better than $8.15 or $8.36. So this summer weather, as it always does, is going to have a pretty large impact on what prices look like. But overall, we're coming up with, given trend yield, some pretty low projections of harvest prices for this fall.
Have you done this for corn as well?
We did it for corn already. And our estimate of a harvest price, which again would be the Dease contract during October, USDA is predicting a 178.5 bushel. We come up with a 310 harvest price for that yield. So again, pretty low. We have bumper yields, let's say 182, 298. So it goes from 310 to 298. And let's say instead you got 176 bushel U.S. yield rather than 178.5, you get a 318 price. For corn, we come up with most scenarios being low $3 corn price for the harvest price. So again, that's where we're at currently with COVID-19 induced lower prices.
I'd like to switch topics with you now, Gary, because tomorrow you'll be helping to host a webinar for the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership. People can register for this online at ilsustainableag.org. That's ilsustainableag.org. The discussion will center around taking production practices like the use of cover crops, no-till, other things, and capitalizing them into the value of land. Can you tell me how that happens?
So actually, if we're talking about tomorrow's webinar, where there are going to be a farmer on there that has made a transition to total cover crops and no-till system. They're noticing changes in their soil, and the hope is that those become permanent and we can have that soil more productive and have a higher price in the future. We're a ways away from that, though, by the way. So
Gary, I just had this conversation this week with one of my brothers about a farm that frankly is hell acres that's been in no-till for 30 years now, not using cover crops, of course. And the change in that farm from conventional tillage, which they used to do, to no-till has been miraculous. You can see it in the numbers.
Now, my guess is also, by the way, they probably did better in the drought year on those farms than on a conventional till.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't have a way to compare it, but yeah. Because they don't have any conventional tillage acres. But I would think that they would tell you that was the case. So the question is, how do you capitalize that? I mean, this is what you're going to discuss. How do you put that into the value of this farm? And maybe it's already there because the APH has risen for that farm. But if you've got a good flat ground piece of tiled land, that would be a different and more difficult thing to find.
So one of the things that as we're moving forward, we would hope that our crop insurance rating systems can find that in soils and incorporate that into rates. And there's a number of initiatives moving forward that are looking at making crop insurance rates more, if the data exists, to make them more reflective of previous efforts, particularly if those reduce risk.
What kind of risk are reduced, in your opinion?
So if you look at crop insurance in Illinois, your premiums, the premiums of Illinois farmers, are primarily based on a drought year. That's your biggest payment year. If you can reduce yield losses in a drought year, you will reduce premiums in Illinois and the Midwest in general. So what we have to do is show that cover crops, no-till, and some other soil resilient strategies reduce yield declines in drought years. So what we need is a drought year with all, as we're getting more and more data on what practices are on fields and cover crops, et cetera, and link that to yield data, those things will happen in the future if they exist.
Anecdotally, from 2012, I know that those farms outproduced the county yield by...
another example of that would be, if you look at the 2012 drought year, corn after corn took bigger hits than corn after soybeans. We know that from research on university level fields. You do know that. And cover crops and the tillage systems haven't really been studied for that sort of benefit. We just sort of have always looked at no-till and said, hey, the yields are what they are. They're more or less the same as conventional, right? And therefore, they don't have a risk reduction. You have to do a different analysis to see if practices, no-till, cover crops, have reduced risk in those drought years, for example. We don't have enough of them. And in 2012, cover crops were just really beginning, right? I mean, there's still not a lot of acres out there. And there still wasn't a lot of acres that were sustained in cover crops in 2012. So we need that data. I mean, the crop insurance RMA is not going to change rates because of a hope. They have to see the data. They have to be convinced of the case.
Is the data available for other types of tillage or non-tillage?
So we are beginning to get more and more of that data becoming available to us as we have gone. You know, as farmers have gone to GPS systems where that data is recorded, that data is becoming available. Right now, RMA uses historical data in their system to rate the policies, and it doesn't incorporate any practices because it isn't captured in their system. The only thing that the RMA captures right now is a yield. So, but as farmers use more GPS systems, that data is in the cloud, and we can use that data to look at how yields vary by practice, by space over time. We won't be talking about all of that tomorrow that's sort of where this is leading, or hoping to lead. And we're a ways away from that. So cover crops. All right. So cover crops right now, what we know about cover crops is the yields are about the same. If you do, you know, in a typical yields are about the same. Well, we need to see what yields look like in a bad year. So you got to hope for a bad year. That's where we're at. So building those data systems to capture that is part of PCM and other efforts as we're moving forward to see what happens as we go through time.
Gary, thanks so much, and good luck with the webinar tomorrow.
You're welcome.
And if you'd like to join Gary Schnicke for the webinar tomorrow at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time, you can do that by registering on the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership website. The address is ilsustainableag.org. That's ilsustainableag.org. This is the second in a series of webinars called Bridging the Gaps. Again, that's tomorrow at 11 a.m., and you can register online today. Search for Illinois Sustainable Ag in Google. You can also look up the Precision Conservation Management website while you're online. That's the PCM research that Gary Schnicke discussed. It's sponsored primarily by the Illinois Corn Growers Association and can be found at precisionconservation.org or search for Precision Conservation Management. As always, there's one other website I'd like you to visit. That's the home site for our radio programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media, Public Radio, for the farming world. By the way, you're a really big part of our programming. Thank you so much for listening. And to those who contribute, thank you so much for making your donation. You can do that anytime. You can also find that on the website as well at willag.org, willag.org. You can also listen to us as a podcast in your favorite podcast applications, Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, the Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast applications as well. On this Wednesday, let's check out the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, if the weather is as nice everywhere across the Midwest as it is here, and they've had as much rain, I would guess that there's not a lot to talk about, and things look pretty good in the United States.
That's right, and I'm on my way to vacation now. No, I'm just kidding. there isn't much going on, and the world is in relatively good shape at the moment. The U.S. Certainly is on the cusp of possible change. At least a lot of forecasters are trying to go down that road. But at the moment, we have really good soil moisture. We're getting some periodic showers and thunderstorms interspersed with some sunshine. The temperatures are seasonable. And really, there's not much to complain about. We do still have dryness in the High Plains region, though. A big part of the region from West Texas all the way up into the northwestern plains and parts of Canada's prairies, that area and most locations in the western United States are still really quite dry. And as far as any kind of huge issue is, you know, right now the hard red winter wheat country is in the process of trying to mature and harvest the crop there. We've had a bunch of rain the last week that did interrupt those processes and might have started raising a little bit of quality concern, but it looks like it's going to dry down just in time to prevent that from being much of an issue. And then it's just a matter of unirrigated summer crops out there from Colorado and western Kansas down into west Texas that still need a better drink of water than what we've seen recently.
Some, as you mentioned, are trying to go down a different road. Is that in week two of the outlook or somewhere further down the line?
Yeah, in the second week of the outlook, there is some ridge building that's showing up in some of the forecast model data, and I do think that that will be the case. The first week of July, we'll have a ridge of high pressure over the heart of the Midwest. It shouldn't be an exceptionally strong ridge, and it won't be able to stick around very long because we've had all this moisture here recently. The ground is favorably moist in quite a few areas. There are some dry pockets. I shouldn't make it look all roses, but the point here is that as the ridge sets up and we start evaporating moisture from the soil and get that moisture into the air and heat that air, and then the air is going to rise, of course, and as it gets higher up, it's probably going to run some cooler air aloft and we'll start condensing that moisture out again as scattered showers and thunderstorms. So that kind of scenario is not a stable environment. So most of the instability that builds up under the ridge will break the ridge down. So the ridge will have to relocate. And when it does, and it will, I think it'll show up somewhere in the drier areas of the plains and parts of the Rocky Mountain region. So once that happens, we'll go back into a quasi-northwesterly flow for the eastern Midwest, which will bring a couple of shots of cooler air once in a while and maybe a chance for some scattered showers. the Western Corn Belt will be a little closer to the high pressure system, of course, when it does relocate. So as we go through July, I think that area will probably have a better potential to dry down, at least at a faster rate than the eastern Midwest. And then the outside of that, we're really just kind of watching the tropics right now, because as they fire up, and they will become rather active here later this season, it'll start having big influence, of course, on U.S. weather. So somewhere down the road, I think we will run into some dryness, but it's not going to be in these next 2 weeks.
Let's stay in the northern hemisphere. Can you work your way from Europe to China?
Yeah, the situation in Europe right now is still mostly good. We've had plenty of moisture around recently. There are pockets of dryness, though, that are still with us in portions of Germany and France, maybe even the UK. And as we go forward through this next two-week period, some of those dry pockets will be allowed to expand a little bit. So there will be a higher need for rain in Western Europe. Eastern Europe, though, has received abundant rain and is still receiving frequent showers and thunderstorms. This would include not only the eastern parts of Europe proper, but also all the way into parts of Ukraine and neighboring areas of Western Russia. So they're in fairly good shape, too. Now, the easternmost parts of the Black Sea region still have their dry bias. This would include the area from the extreme easternmost part of Ukraine and more likely the southern region of Russia into Kazakhstan. That area is still quite dry. We do have some improvement taking place in the Russian New Lands, the area near the Kazakhstan border where there's a lot of spring wheat and sunseed produced, has been a little drier biased in recent weeks. Nothing critical, but it is going to rain over that way as we go forward through the coming weeks. So that'll put some of that moisture back in the ground and remove that area as a possible concern. And then all the way over into India and China, really conditions are looking quite good. In India in particular, the monsoon has advanced quite favorably this year. There's plenty of moisture around. There's going to be a lot more coming. There's no reason to be concerned about dryness in India this season. And in China, boy, dryness is the last thing on their minds. In some parts of the country, it's just been a crazy wet year, very similar to what we've had here in the States the last couple of years. China's just been swallowed up by a huge amount of water, and I think there's been a lot of crop loss, especially in the southern parts of that country. Unfortunately, they're fairly closed-lipped about this, so we really don't have any good idea how much crop damage has occurred, but the rain amounts are phenomenal since the 1st of March in some locations. So we're expecting a lot of rice damage and rapeseed damage. Farther to the north, though, in the corn and soybean areas, everything's looking fairly good there, though, unfortunately for our prices here in the States. The outlook for China is still for a regular occurrence of rain and sunshine for the next 10 days to 2 weeks, so it's going to be pretty hard to make a turn here on their corn and soybeans.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find and listen to us on demand online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Just click and play right there from the website, the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, our other programming as well. Or you can find us as a podcast and listen to us in places like Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast too, however you listen to our programming. Thank you so much for joining us each and every day here at Illinois Public Media for our agricultural programming. On behalf of University of Illinois Extension, I'm farm broadcaster Todd Gleason.